Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ruth Ann. I'm sorry for any inconvenience. This show is scheduled for 6 o'clock Central Time, and just by luck, I found out that it had it down for 5 here on the show blurb, but everything I have says 6 o'clock like I scheduled it. So our guests will be here at 6 o'clock, so please come back. I'm so sorry. Our guests will be here at 6 p.m. Central. Socialist Insights will begin at 6 p.m. Central. Socialist Insight with Stuart Alexander will begin at 6 p.m. Central as originally scheduled, through no fault of our own. Blog Talk put it in one place as 5 o'clock, but it will be at 6.
we're okay. We'll be fine. But you put out everywhere. This is not. I mean, once you find what I found, so earlier I had been on the stage and I saw it was the same size, and I went back and I looked at it. So just like your class, like you were five, I saw that. And this was the start. So then I had to run and change it to make it 2 hours. So we'll start on time. I scheduled it for 6 to 7. But then, Blog Talk, even though it's scheduled that way, I looked and it's 7 to 7. They put it down for 5. So people who clicked on that thing were seeing 5 o'clock. So some people started coming in the chat, and I told them, I wrote it out and I gave the announcement all the time. That you know, called Hours Blog Talk. And I wanted just to, it's on only on my regular phone, so I can't go home because usually when I call it from my home phone, usually we would talk before the show starts, but that will be on the air. You can say you can call it the show now.
We'll be on as scheduled at 6 p.m. Central. really crazy, and Mercury's not even retrograde. But Stuart and Stephen will be here in 35 minutes, 6 p.m. Central. Socialist Insights show will begin in 25 minutes.
you know, a couple minutes before that.
The Socialist Insight with Stuart Alexander will begin in 15 minutes. We're almost to a countdown, everyone. Hopefully, Blog Talk won't pull this on us again next week. 7 minutes on the countdown. Hi, Jordan. Still waiting for Stuart and Stephen. Hello.
Hello.
I have to tell you, you're already on the air. Blog Talk
well,
made
great.
A mistake.
Oh, boy. I'm 5 minutes early.
Yeah, I know. No, Blog Talk made a mistake. They started it at 5 instead of 6, so I've just been going on, you know, telling people that you guys are coming, et cetera, and so it's not a problem, but yeah.
Good, and your name is?
I'm Ruth Ann.
Ruth Ann, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. So
I just spoke with Stuart, and he should be calling in very shortly.
Good. So
yeah, we'll be fine.
Oh, great.
He said that you're on the West Coast right now.
Yes, I'm in Seattle, Washington. I'm on a West Coast tour for the campaign.
All right. Oh, I love Seattle. Good for you.
Yes. Yeah. Lots of water.
Oh, yeah. And good food and scenery. It's just very nice there.
Yes. Do you, you're a 718. Are you in New York?
No, I'm in Chicago.
Chicago, right.
718 is the Blog Talk number.
Yes, right.
For this particular station.
Right.
So.
I was in Chicago for the NATO demonstrations, the anti-NATO demonstrations.
Okay.
Never
yeah.
Seen so many police in one place in my whole life, and I'm not spring chicken.
Well, the new mayor hired Moore and all of that. He's done several things. I'm pleasantly surprised that it went as well as it did. I think that everybody was very fortunate. Except a few people, obviously, but as a whole, generally, it could have been so much worse, and so many of us thought it would be.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the hype, isn't it, to get people not to come?
Exactly. But also, you know, people remember. They remember 68.
Right, yeah.
And what Richie's dad did. I mean, yeah, he was really hardcore. So, but sure, yeah, you do all this stuff and hope that nobody will turn out.
Right. And the youth that were framed by the government.
Yeah.
You know, on Wednesday, I think it was on Thursday night, they raided and they took them off and they held them incognito. And the last I've heard that they had an indictment, a sealed indictment. The lawyers couldn't even get to the to what they were being indicted for.
Yeah,
so it's a real,
those men from Florida were totally set up. In,
yes, and yeah, young and don't know anything.
Yeah.
And it's just more of the intimidation that's coming from the effort to create a police state and scare everybody.
Yeah, it is.
So I feel very sorry for young people that get caught up in the machine that way. And
I do too. Yeah.
We've organized, you know, protests around them. Here in Seattle, they did the same thing.
Stuart is here now. I know Seattle has been having some problems. Yeah.
Hi. And hello, Ruthann.
Hi there. I told him that you would be here, that we're on the air already, but we're going to start the program in, I guess, about now. So tonight, for the first show of the Socialist Insight with Stuart Alexander, Stuart is going to be interviewed along with Stephen Durham from the Freedom Socialist Party. And as most of you know, Stuart is the candidate for the Socialist Party USA. So and they're both running for president. They're friends, so we're not going to see a
very
bunch
good
of,
friends.
Yes, we're not going to see a bunch of bitterness because we're not going to do that kind of a show. So, gentlemen,
no.
I'm very happy to have you here, and I'm very happy to be moderating this.
I'm very excited. I want to say I'm very excited to have Stephen as our first guest.
Exactly.
Stephen, he has a lot to share with us. He has a very rich background in the socialist movement, and he has a lot that he would like to share what his campaign is doing and also how it can make changes here in U.S. politics
that will benefit working people. We're going to talk about that with both of you. And I just wanted to start out by asking just a little bit, Stephen, if you would begin and tell us a little bit about your campaign and your running mate and your home state, and then we'll go on to Stuart. Yeah.
Well, I live in New York City. I've lived there for 28 years. I grew up on the West Coast. I went to the University of California, Berkeley, graduated in 1977, so I became radicalized as a youth. And became a socialist by joining the Freedom Socialist Party over 30 years ago. And I'm running with Cristina Lopez. She's the vice presidential candidate. She grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. And she's a Chicana and a Native American. And so she's the vice presidential candidate, and she's a woman of color and a woman who knows about oppression on many different levels. And the campaign's been going really well. We decided to run the campaign and announce the campaign in January, and it's a bold socialist feminist campaign that has received a lot of interest among workers and immigrants and people of color and lesbians and gays, and we talk about all the issues. And our first challenge was to get on the ballot in California. They wouldn't approve me as a candidate for the Peace and Freedom Party in the primary elections, saying the state of California, the Secretary of State said that I wasn't a legitimate candidate, and we launched a national campaign with the support of people in the Peace and Freedom Party and the Socialist Party, and we put enough pressure on her to back down. So that's the beginning of the campaign. We had a big challenge, and we had a victory in the very beginning because we pulled together with other people.
So that's a good way to start it out, yes. Stuart, do you want to talk a little bit about your campaign and about Alex? And
myself, I'm my residence here in California. I've been in California for the majority of my life. First time I came to California was in the 50s, and left for a very short time. But for the most part, I've spent ever since the 60s I've been here in California. The campaign, I'll mention, you know, the campaign is doing well. We have been able to reach out to an entire nation with ballot access, getting on the ballot in several states, starting with Colorado, Ohio, and we've been very aggressively pursuing ballot access in many of the other states. But my running mate is Alex Mendoza. He is a resident of Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area, and he has been sharing the campaigns in many of the southern states, especially right there in Texas. The Socialist Party, we have gotten a lot of support from the various chapters throughout the country. Just a little bit more about myself. I attend a school here in California, attending Dominguez State University back in the 70s, and also much of the politics that I have been involved with over the years when I ran for lieutenant governor here in California, when I ran as a candidate for governor, ran as a candidate for mayor of Los Angeles back in the 80s. Much of my politics and my involvement politically has been right here in the state of California. Within the last 4 to 5 years, it has expanded to a national level. Even in 2008, when I ran as the vice presidential candidate with mm-hmm. Brian Moore with the Socialist Party USA.
Nice.
But just give you a little bit about the party. We are.
Could I interrupt?
Sure.
Well, and ask because I wanted to just ask both of you. You said that Stephen said he was radicalized in college. And Stuart, would that be about it for you? Because I wondered what had led you to this path way back.
Well, I started becoming radicalized back even when back in the 60s, and it was during the time of the Vietnam period. I
mm-hmm.
felt that working people, some, you know, they were the ones always caught on the short end. You saw the rich college kids; they were able to escape. They were always able to find some type of way to escape the draft, not to be able to serve active duty. You always had the people that were the poorest. They were the ones going into the Army or being drafted and being sent into Vietnam. It was a lot of the radical movement. You saw it in the high schools, on the college campuses back in the 60s. More so when I started looking at in the 80s when Reagan came in, you start seeing where it was a shift toward the big corporations and the wealthy in our society, as opposed to taking care of the needs for working people. And ever since the 80s, we have seen that shift even grow more against working people. I would say in 1996, 1997, that's when I started realizing that I was not satisfied being registered as a Democrat. It was a party that I didn't see any difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party.
Right.
And at that time, I changed my registration, became politically involved with the Peace and Freedom Party, and that, I would say, was where I made the shift, where I went from being someone that was seriously interested in working in the socialist movement, and also where I could be able to work with working class people that shared many of the same issues that I share.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's. I just want to go ahead, Stephen.
Also, just briefly, our campaign has a national focus. Also, we launched the campaign as a write-in campaign, as a protest against the rigged elections. With the resources we had, we thought that the best thing to do with our resources was to ask people to do a write-in campaign. And actually, we're now approved in 21 different states. The votes will be counted. That's a whole other level that actually I've learned about in this election. In order to even get the votes counted in many of the states, the majority of states, you have to file papers to get the votes
right.
counted. So even if it's a write-in campaign. So
and
we're
do,
on
do
20.
You,
right.
Do you have to pay money in each of those states to have that
you don't
done
have,
or not?
To get the votes counted, you don't have to pay any money, but it varies between 55 different people supporting your campaign and in many states, that all those in California have to be notarized. Many of the states, that signatures have to be notarized, and it varies from state to state, from one person, and only one person has to sign support the campaign in New York State, to 55 in California, 29 in Florida. So that's a whole another level of you can't really you can't even carry out your protest and have any effect unless you're willing to count, you know, just file these papers. So it's another level of bureaucracy which keeps people, you know, from voting.
About that. Like getting on, we'll talk about the ballot access, but I wondered how many, each of you, how many states you're on the ballot and how many you have write-ins for. Stephen, you said there's 21.
We're not on the ballot anywhere.
We
have 20. We have 21 states and 7 pending. So that's 28 states where the votes will be counted. Our write-in votes will be counted.
Right. Okay, Stuart. How about?
Well, presently, write-in and also on the ballot. We're actually on the ballot. We were just nominated by the Liberty Union in Vermont. We're fighting some legal things that we need to deal with as far as the nomination process, but we should be on the ballot in Vermont. Also, Ohio, we are already on the ballot in Ohio. Colorado, when you consider write-in and also on the ballot, we're on, I believe it's around 9 or 10 different states that we're on right now. But the challenges are great. Stephen, he knows about those challenges, trying to get in as a write-in and as a write-in candidate, or actually to be on the ballot. As one of the things that Stephen mentioned, which is very relevant, the ballot access in this country, Stephen said they're rigged, and he's right.
Oh, yeah.
They're rigged against third-party candidates to make certain that you don't get on the ballot. But I know we're going to deal with that later, but just answering your question, I believe we're on 9 or 10 different states, write-in or actually on the ballot.
Okay. All right. So actually, I think that this is it's a pretty good showing, and we still have 10 weeks to go.
Right.
So I don't know, though, how close to the election you can do this, I mean, get on the ballot or be...
Depending on the state. Yeah. Some states, it can go all the way up to 30 days before the election. And most states, they start closing it around 2 months before the election. Stephen, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, there's like... Next week, Florida closes, and there's actually one state, I've forgotten what it is, but you can, Maryland, with Maryland, you have to have 10 people supporting the campaign, giving their names and addresses, and that actually, those go all the way to October 31st. So it's just a big mixed bag. I mean, we have it's very interesting, for president, they federally regulate the whole financial aspect of it, right? But every other aspect of the president, of being a presidential candidate is really reduced to a really states' rights issue, which is, when it comes to states' rights, in my view, it's always negative because it carries, you know, it's very negative, you know, it makes it very confusing to everybody.
But the reason why it's done that way is to make the political process where it will not work for the minor parties.
Exactly.
Now, they make exceptions for the two political parties, the Democrats and Republicans. I remember back in 2008, the Democrats and the Republicans were late meeting deadlines for ballot access in Texas. And the Secretary of State at the time made an exception for both parties. Both parties were actually behind
on the schedule.
And they made an exception. In other words, they overlooked the filing for both the Democrats and the Republicans because they were major parties. They don't make these type of exceptions for the minor parties or third-party candidates.
Right.
And there's really a move to make it harder for third parties, like Proposition 14 in California, where only the two candidates that receive the highest numbers of votes will be on the November ballot for any position. So you could conceivably have two Democrats or two Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
So no opposition at all. But that's just. But that is, they're willing to make that concession just to freeze out the minority parties and the parties that are really talking about the issues. That's when we think is a big plus of our campaign, is we've been able to push the discussion on the crisis to the left,
mm-hmm.
and getting out alternative, bold socialist solutions to the problems that people face. And so that's, people are not happy. People are fed up, and they're glad to see, I'm sure Stuart has the same experience, they're glad to see people who are willing to step out there and say what we think.
How is the message being received?
Stephen?
Well, I think it's being received well. I find it's being received very well by young people who feel that they'll have no Social Security, they have no future. I think in terms of no jobs, I mean, the unemployment is so high, and $25,000 of student debt is the average amount that university graduates have, and we call for canceling that completely. I think among young people there's been a great response. I think there's a good response among immigrants, because our campaign's very strong in defending rights of immigrants and fighting immigrant oppression, immigrant prejudice especially. And I think there's a good response among elderly people who are seeing that their situation is not that bright for the future. So I think we've gotten a good response. But I think mostly the ideas I found that people agree with these ideas and are glad to see somebody articulating them. And there's a higher level of...
How would you suggest people join in to get this message out? People whose sympathies lie with all these things that you're talking about.
Unfortunately, we don't have a corporate media. But Stephen, why don't you speak
on
that too?
Well, just briefly, I don't want to take all the time here. I just want to. Well, you know, we're also talking about with the people we talk about. We say we have to organize beyond the election. You know, the election is just a way to get to know people and to raise the issues and to register a protest against the rigged electoral system. But really, we have to build a movement. And actually, the Freedom Socialist Party feels very strongly that that movement is on the horizon, and that's why it's so important what we're doing. People are not defeated here yet. They're being attacked, but they're not defeated. And really, life and death battles lie on the horizon. And so, talking about working class solutions to the problems that working people face. Is part of it, but it's also organizing beyond the election itself.
And what I like to say also is, back to what Stephen mentioned earlier, the elections are rigged. The elections also in this country are unconstitutional, and I would even go as far as to say they're actually they're not legitimate. When you consider that the federal government, the only thing they do is just monitor, the filings of the various candidates, and also they look at the monetary side of the campaign. But beyond that, they do nothing. They leave it up to the states, and the states come in with various requirements that are very difficult to achieve. Like here in California, if you were to look at a full party. Being able to get on the ballot in California, that's over 1 million signatures to get on the ballot. If you look at a candidate trying to meet those requirements, instead of running as received for the entire party in California, it's almost 173,000 signatures to get on the ballot. That is totally unconstitutional. Totally unconstitutional. But all of this is designed to make certain that third parties are off the ballot. But I don't want to necessarily just dwell on that. I wanted to mention something else. You mentioned about the successes of the campaign. And there are various successes that we're able to enjoy right now. One of the things I'll mention here for this election, which has been very unique since the last elections in 2008, Facebook has been tremendous in being able to make it available to minor parties to be able to communicate with the masses. I think Stephen, his campaign, especially mine, I think it's been able to generate a vast amount of support, and also programs such as this right here, where we're able to get that message out to hundreds of thousands of, and millions of people across the country. Just recently, I was right there in New York, well, actually it was several months ago, for the Left Forum, and a lot of people were already aware of what we were talking about and the message from the Alexander Mendoza campaign just because of what they had seen over the Internet. So the Internet
right.
is really opening up new doors for parties such as the Freedom Socialist Party, Stevens campaign, and also for the Socialist Party USA. And we realize that that message is being received quite well from students, by seniors, especially by working people that are looking for alternatives to the two-party system that presently is not working here in the country.
So, okay, you're saying both of that, from young people to seniors. I mean, it's been received across
and
the board,
people.
Actually. Well, that's what I'm saying,
right,
from
exactly.
young people to the seniors. We were talking about the working people, the unemployed. It's across the board. So,
right, across
do
the
you
board.
Think, let me ask you, Stuart, we'll start with you. Is America ready for socialism?
I believe America is ready for socialism. That's one of the reasons why the capitalist system we live in today, why they're fighting so they're fighting tooth and nail to hold on to what they got. People now realize here in the 21st century that capitalism is a complete failure. It is not working for working people. We see the highest unemployment in this country than we have seen in the last five decades in this country. The only way the economy is being sustained, well, I shouldn't say the only way, one of the ways that they're trying to sustain the economy is through war. We can't even go 3 to 5 years, let's make it 1 or 2 years, before we're in another war. So we don't need a war economy, but that's one of the failures of capitalism. The other part of a failure of capitalism, when you have over 25 million people that are unemployed, that's a failure of capitalism. When you have student loan debt in this country, as Stephen mentioned, is over $1.1 trillion. The average student is strapped with $25,000
and many, many
upon,
more, many more.
Right, because now yeah. people are saying that capitalism is not working. And as Stephen mentioned also, is people are starting to take a look at what the message is that's coming from our campaigns of what the socialists are talking about and saying maybe that's a better way. The same thing happened in the 30s. And unfortunately, in the 30s, the capitalists just figured out how they can maneuver it just to be able to get us out of the Depression, which it didn't completely get us out of the Depression. They used war to get us out of the Depression. But it was, you know, many of the programs that they instituted then, it started moving us out of the Depression. But they were socialist programs, such as Social Security. When they came up with a housing program, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac back in the 30s when they came up with various things to help people with housing, education, all of these things to help soldiers when they were coming back from war. All these programs were socialist programs that were introduced, and people enjoyed them. Unfortunately,
right.
what we see under capitalism, they always try to use that whatever is good and working for working people is how can we make a profit on it, such as education. That's why you
exactly.
see trying to privatize that. Medicare,
right.
Paul Ryan, well, you know, talking about the future of Medicare, but when you listen to that program, it's really talking about how they can turn this into a system that is actually privatized.
Right. That's, and that was one of the things. I guess we'll go back to this, though, just a minute. I just wanted to comment that I read that out of the 236 years the United States has existed, we only spent 20 or 21 of those years when we weren't fighting war somewhere.
So that we weren't in war. And
Isn't that disgusting?
Actually pathetic. That's pathetic.
That just made me ill to have it just
and
like come
been,
right home like
and
that.
And there have been over 40-plus economic crises.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
yeah.
it's a real nature of capitalism, even capitalism in its ascendancy, was characterized by economic crises, and it's characterized by economic crises in its downturn also. I think that to answer your question briefly, nothing is driving people more to socialism than the system itself.
Okay.
And that is
right.
Pretty powerful.
Good point.
And yes, people are sick of war. They're sick of poverty. They're sick of being ripped off. And do people understand yet how to get there? I don't think so. But that's
right.
What this campaign is about, planting the seeds of the ideas, you know, in our platforms. And in my campaign, I'm challenging everybody to vote for the platform, you know, to go to the website. We have a website. It's votesocialism.com. You go to the website and read the platform. Then I tell people, every politician you see, challenge every politician you see with the ideas in this platform, because that's been another aspect of the campaigns the Freedom Socialist Party has carried on a state level. I ran for the state assembly in New York City, and actually by the end of the campaign, the man I was running against, a real Democratic Party machine person, he was actually talking about transportation in a way that I'd raised it.
Wow.
So that's
it
another
and
that's another aspect of our campaigns. Just one little other thing I'd like to interject here is that, yes, and the New Deal was a concession to the working class because we've been given nothing. They've given us nothing without a fight. But actually in the Depression, there was a radical movement, and actually a lot of the concessions were made, like Social Security and the NLRB, were made because they were afraid of a revolution. That's why it's so important to have both socialist voices like the Socialist Party and the Freedom Socialist Party campaigns out there saying that we're in the electoral arena to raise the ideas, but we really understand that it needs to be fundamental change in this country. We might get some concessions out of the ruling class if we openly organize as socialists and organize for fundamental change, because they will do things to keep their system alive, and in the process we might get some concessions out of them. And that's why it's so important to break with the Democrats and the Republicans and take a stand today and go to the voting booth and exercise a profoundly democratic right and write in the candidate that you think is most, that represents you. Like our campaign says, vote for the greater good instead of the lesser evil. And I know that Stuart and I agree with that concept. That's what we're asking people to do in our campaigns.
Right.
Right.
One of the things that Stephen brought up, where you asked people to write in the names of the socialist candidates and write in third parties, where we can look at bringing about real social change in this country. One of the things I'll mention that I like, I'm not saying it's ideal, but it's a move in a better direction. In the state of Texas, they have where the write-in candidates are actually posted at wherever the voting locations are at. The names of the candidates are posted where individuals can see those candidates that they
That's
need to
excellent.
Write in. Right,
yes.
And this gives us an opportunity. The downside, as Stephen is very aware of, people can be aware of the candidates, but the other part of that equation is to make certain that those votes are counted.
Right.
You have certain states like Pennsylvania, any candidate can qualify as a write-in candidate, which would be a write-in candidate in Pennsylvania as well. But the downside is, if you have any write-in votes in Pennsylvania, is very conceivable that the majority, and when I say the majority, you probably can look at out of 100, you may have 3 that are actually counted. So that's the downside of that process. But as Stephen had mentioned, it is a step in the right direction to have write-in as his write-in campaign. Ideally, we like to try to see about getting on the ballot, but that gives us an opportunity where people can be able to have a choice beyond the 2 corporate parties.
Well, I think that this election is going to show that there's a lot of people who aren't content with the Democrats or Republicans, and we need, like you're saying, for them to vote third party. And just if they will just, like, add up all the third party votes together, I mean, you know, just, of course, unofficially, but you can see then the percentage of people that are not happy. And I think that's
a
good
thing.
You know,
one other thing, right. Ruth, that you brought up, and Steve is aware, it's amazing over the last 6 or 7 years how the shift, people's opinion about socialism has changed. Because,
I was going to talk about that.
They realize it's not working. But Presently today, I was looking at some numbers, and of course, I can't verify the numbers because I saw it over the internet. For me to verify it, I need to know what all the sources, where the sources are coming from.
Right.
But the numbers were showing that 52% of the U.S. population are open to socialist ideas. And now the numbers have increased as far as the people that believe that socialism is better in this country. It was 34%. Here's another thing I found was very interesting. Now, this was, I believe it was on MSNBC, and once in a while I look at those dirty stations myself, you know, to
you
find
do.
Out what the other side is talking about. But they were talking about people being open to socialism and capitalism and people's opinion. And they were saying, well, you know, a lot of people really don't like talking about capitalism today because, you know, capitalism is becoming a bad word, you know. And I remember they were saying that about socialism.
Right.
And socialism was a bad word.
Now, I like
and
those
the person,
figures.
Now, this wasn't the commentator, but this is one of the persons that was there on the program. I was saying, well, what a shift.
Yeah, that's something that, as you know, I mean, I don't live in Chicago. I live out in a small town, and here, no, socialism is not a good word. And so I think that's one of the things that some of us are trying to talk to people about, different ideas that are socialist, but without right at the beginning coming in using the word, which is really
right.
Sad. But the people here, because they grew up as I did, thinking or being taught that socialism and communism were the plague of mankind. And because
right.
we were always given wrong information, of course, so it takes a while.
And that's why it's so important for us to join those struggles between election
exactly.
years.
Exactly.
And join those struggles and or openly do it as socialists so people get a chance to know who we are and know that we're just not politicians that are in the electoral arena, but we're activists that are on the ground fighting for people. No struggle is too small to fight. And so that's so important that we, as political parties, the Socialist Party and the FSP, between elections, are active in defending those people who we hope to represent, who we want to get our ideas out to. But it's a statement of the crisis of capitalism, and that people are more open to the ideas, and that anti-capitalism is more accepted. It has a lot. That's where I credit the Occupy movement. I think
right.
that really shifted the discussion. That's a very good thing that's happened out of it. And yet there are a lot of people in the Occupy movement that are so cynical about elections and
yeah.
that they won't vote. And that's why the FSP is running its campaign to give people a way to intervene in the elections that isn't following the two parties of big business, but is giving them a chance to take a stand on the platform that we're running on.
Right. I tell people frequently that, you know, the ones who say, well, I'm just not going to vote. I'm going to take a stand and not vote. It's like, no, you're not taking a stand. You're showing that you're just apathetic, and
right.
the Republicans and Democrats want you not to vote.
That's
so you're doing exactly what they want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Apathy and disillusionment, and we can't really change anything. And that's, you know, the campaign, the Freedom Socialist campaign, I'm sure the Socialist campaign is trying to do the same. We want to give the working class, we want to give them a sense of their own power. I mean, all the wealth is created by the working class, and the American
exactly.
working class is not defeated. And they got huge concessions out of the ruling class right after World War II, when in 1946 there were more people on strike in this country than ever before. And then in the same year, what happened? They passed the Taft-Hartley Act, which was an attack
right.
on the right to organize. And that's still in the book. So we call for repealing all the anti-labor legislation. But as people, and then we have the phenomenon of, since the 60s, there haven't been strong movements. There's been a lot of important struggles, but in many ways the movements haven't come forward the way they did in the 60s with the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement, the women's movement, the lesbian and gay movement, the Chicano movement. We're all really challenging the Nixon administration, and actually he made a few concessions to us on the basis of those movements. So we're about movement building as much as we are about, you know, getting elected. And in the process of building movements, the working class can feel its own power, and that's where we're really answering the propaganda. I mean, we're really this the subjects of the greatest propaganda machine ever in human history.
Well, I think what is happening is, if you look at it from the system that we have today, what they have done is they create a lot of things to sanitize the conditions that people are seeing. I know you remember it, back in the 70s and 80s when they had unemployment lines, and unemployment is just as severe as it was 15, 20 years ago. But as I mentioned, the capitalists, what they have done is they have sanitized it, and by sanitizing, what they do is they defuse the movement where people are not willing to go out into the streets. When you saw those lines that were wrapped around employment offices where sometimes they were like a quarter of a mile long, you know, people can understand that we have an unemployment problem. When they had, back in the 70s, 60s and 70s, when they had a draft, then people could understand that, you know, war is not a good thing, because they had the draft and they turned on the television and they saw the people, the body bags off of the military transports. People could understand that. So what they did instead in regards to the draft, they made it, the economy is so, you know, it is so weak at this point. Now I find many of the youth, and especially I see this on a daily basis, even in the work line of work that I do, I ask military people, you know, why did you get in? Well, it was security. I needed a job. And now the
draft.
Shift,
yeah.
Right, it's an economic draft. It's still a draft, but now people are doing it just so they can have benefits for their family, so they can
Which
have a
really
job.
Which is really sad. When you have to leave any kind of spiritual morality behind, you know,
right,
to go and kill people so you can support your family. What a horrible thing we've come to.
I have seen what is really unfortunate is many times you see husband and wives both are joining the military so they can have two incomes and they have children. You know, but that's what is. But like you say, it's an economic draft. So what the capitalist system that we live in, what they have done is they do various things to sanitize and make it seem that it's working for working people, when in reality it's not really working for them. It's only just bandage of approaches that they are actually doing.
Oh, sure,
it's not solving
they're not
the
curing
problem.
It. No.
They're not curing it.
It's just Stephen
probably can. You know, what he's working for and what I'm working for, we're looking for long-term solutions. And for the long-term solutions, we need to make a total transformation from capitalism to socialism, because in the long term, that's what it's going to take for working people.
I'm going to ask you some of those questions about long-term solutions, but I have a question from the chat room. And we have a man who is studying at DePaul in Chicago right now, wanting to know how he can become involved. And what do you think is the best way?
Steve.
Well, I mentioned our website. Go to the website. We need people to communicate with us. Look at our platform. Tell us what you think. If you're talking about the next 10 weeks in terms of the election, go to our website and check out what we have to say. I'm sure the Socialist Party has a website, too. That's one thing.
Yes.
The other thing is to join in a broader sense, is to join an organization in the struggle that's going on in his own community. And
well, I think
the
that's
ideas
what
of the campaign.
Was wondering, because he's not from Chicago. He's from Florida. He's up here getting his master's.
Yeah.
And so he wants to know what he can do right now.
You need to go. Well, he can go and join students that are – be aware of what's happening around you. There are people struggling on every level. And join them and decide what you think are the most important points and get involved in fighting to save something that's being taken away. There's so many battles everywhere on so many fronts. And then seriously consider the ideas of socialism and the process of that.
And part of what Stephen is saying, I agree with what Stephen is saying there. And part of what you can do to get involved, first of all, people say, well, what is your website? And the only thing you have to do is pull up Socialist Party USA, pull up the Freedom Socialist Party, and you have links to both the websites where you can be able to find out how you can get involved with the national organizations. A lot of times I find people say, well, we need to boycott the elections and not vote. Well, I don't want someone else voting for me because they probably will make the wrong decision. So Stephen is a write-in candidate. I'll be on the ballot in probably over half the states by November the 6th.
Okay, my question.
But the other way you can get involved is you need to vote. It's not as easy to vote for someone that's actually listed right there on the ballot. But when you write in that candidate, you need to write in the candidate. And we as socialists need to look for accountability to make certain that those votes are counted.
Okay, my question is, on the two websites, is there someplace to click to see different cities with contact information? So that's what I'm wanting.
Yes, exactly. Right. There is. There is. The Freedom Socialist Party is in five different cities. So, but we also travel to visit people and talk to people who are interested in our ideas. So that's before the campaign or after. So the first step is open up communication with the Freedom Socialist Party or the Socialist Party. And, you know,
okay.
I might mention the Socialist
I'm beating
Party
a dead
also.
Horse. I'm beating a dead horse, but, okay, there's only like
it's one other thing I wanted
five
to mention.
Cities listed. So that's what I'm saying. If you live in a city, it's not listed. How do you, if you want to be involved with one of these parties, what do you do? Who do you talk to? I mean, you want to go out and, you know, meet some people. What is the best way to do that?
Well, one of the things that I've seen and which I appreciate is in some of the smaller cities where the Socialist Party is organized. But say, for instance, I've seen some states such as right there in Kentucky. This was several months ago near the beginning of the campaign. It actually was in 2011. And people contacted me because they said, well, you're running as a candidate with the Socialist Party USA. How can we organize here in Kentucky? Which I was very excited about that. I was contacted by a couple of people, and they started organizing. Right here in California, I could see what a difference just – four people made right here in Palm Springs. And, of course, this was for a high school event where Palm Springs High School, they were putting together an event where they were various groups were sponsoring presidential candidates. But those four students put together, energized the whole student body of the school behind supporting this campaign. So you can do it right there in your school to support a campaign such as Stephen or the campaign for the Socialist Party USA. You can do this on small groups. You can do it right in your own neighborhood. You can actually form a local for either of the parties. And that's what you call grassroots. I can understand the power of grassroots organizing even from my roots when I was with the Florida Consumer Action Network back in the 80s. Grassroots organizing, we were able to move on legislation right there in Florida as a small group where we were able to influence legislation and achieve legislation that affected the entire state of Florida to help to clean up the water supply there in the state. So don't ever underestimate what two, three, half a dozen people can do, only if they organize.
Well, the good things that we have come from small beginnings. We know that it's from the ground level up. It's never coming from up above down. We know the results of that. But I wanted to say that recently I've heard people talking about rebellion instead of revolution. And, you know, they were meaning by that just go ahead and do it your way. But you also have to be willing to take what comes. But, you know, when citizens rebel, a lot of times those in control do give up, or they give up some of their power, whatever.
Right.
And you know, we were talking about working to get this and this changed. But tell me, both of you, how much do you think that we can reasonably, we might want to change a lot more, but say by 2016, how much do you think – we can have changed in this country?
Well, you don't know because there's a lot of different factors, you know.
Right. What do you think?
I think by 2016, I don't think that there's going to be any. There's no solution on the horizon for the economic crisis besides war, and they're trying to make if they continue another 4 years and make the working class attempt to make us pay for the economic crisis that they created. I think that's just going to spur more and more rebellion. I think there's a whole generation that is unemployed with college educations and debt. I think that they're going to join. I think there's a greater, and even in the Occupy movement, there were discussions about race, sex, sexuality, and how to bring all the struggles together. There's an embryonic attempt to really deal with issues that we didn't even deal with in the 60s adequately. So, I mean, by 2016, I can't see the capitalists giving us any solution. I mean, they may go to war if they try to, you know, the depression, got out of the depression with the World War II, which led to destruction of human and natural resources to unprecedented time. And
more than ever.
So I think that I have great respect for the intelligence of this working class, and you know, we need to do everything possible so that we feel our own power, and we do that by organizing. I think
and that's one thing that Occupy has helped a lot of people to be empowered.
Occupy right there.
Right, because a lot of the people who are coming from Occupy are still in it, or maybe they were for a while, whatever. They're getting more of a feel for how to organize and for things that are worth fighting over and things that aren't. So I think
the Occupy movement, I have to say, has been the greatest threat to this capitalist system in decades, because even though it wasn't organized, it was beginning to organize throughout the country. And you had this present administration and various law enforcement agencies across the nation. They were trying to figure out how could they harness what was taking place. And we have seen that right here in California, when you see what was going on in Oakland, in Los Angeles, and how they were actually, they had gone on the attack against the Occupy movement. And we haven't seen the end of that, because that was a power in itself, where people were demanding their rights, their human rights, right in the streets. So as Stephen had mentioned, what is it going to take to turn this around? By 2016, I don't understand what can really turn it around when you see things going in the direction of what they're going right now. We can see with the election of Obama and also Mitt Romney, with either one of them being elected into the White House in 2012, it is bringing on – people need to understand what that word austerity means. I mentioned austerity to people in the street, and they say, well, what is that?
They
need to understand what austerity is, because if you understand that word, you will understand what has taken place in many of the countries right there in Europe. And we're very close to experience the same thing right here in this country, where it's going to affect our jobs, where it's going to affect us as far as taxes, where it's going to affect us as far as our health care. That's what austerity and also housing is going to affect all of us. So
is ridiculous.
That's 2016, what's looming for us if we still move in that direction. And the worst part, when you look at what Stephen mentioned a few minutes ago, in the short term, we're very close to going into another war. That's what took us out of the depression, the loss of millions of human lives back in the 40s. But going from austerity measures to going to war, that's going from bad to worse.
Exactly. I wanted to ask each of you, Stephen, we'll start with you. As president, what would your top three priorities be?
Well, the first one would be jobs, and the jobs. I think you know, without a job in the capitalism, you really have, you know, you become a non-entity. People, even the people in the New York subway, you know, asking for donations. I mean, it's as much the human contact of someone recognizing them and seeing them and giving them a dollar as it is getting the dollar itself. So jobs would be the first thing, and that could be done. And the second thing is really tied to the first, and that would be dismantling the war machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's trillions of dollars. You could take that money and create jobs for everybody by reducing the work week to 30 hours and keep the 40 hours pay. That would create 25% more jobs. So jobs, and then dismantling the war machine. That means bringing all the veterans home, all the military home, closing all the bases, and putting soldiers to work at union wages, rebuilding the infrastructure, and that would be doing constructive work rather than
exactly.
destructive work. And it was very moving to hear the veterans speak at the anti-NATO demonstrations in April in Chicago.
I know,
talking
when
about
they gave
how
the
they
medals back. Yeah.
Yes, and saying how they went to solve a problem. They realized they were part of this problem. The honesty and the authenticity of those veterans is so important to really building an anti-war movement and talking about PSTD and they deserve a real place in the movement, and they're so important. And I think the third thing would be to end pollution and nationalize the gas and oil industry and have renewable energy, because Mother Earth is really suffering and is very vulnerable, and capitalism is in its downfall, is just tearing the earth apart. And I, you know, there is going to be a tipping point, and that's why we have to really move to preserve the environment and preserve ourselves in the same process. So
well, we are
those
part
are the
of
three
it.
Things.
We're all connected.
I think
okay, thank you,
very
Stephen.
Important.
Well,
okay,
want to,
Stuart,
if you
how
want
about
to
yours?
The three things
the top
for me,
three
as Stephen mentioned, jobs is right at the top of the list. That was something that was promised by Obama back in 2008, and coming into 2009, that was a broken promise. The other thing is, and we have the resources where we can put millions of Americans back to work right now. Obama had over, I think it was $823 billion shovel-ready jobs. Then afterwards he said, well, the jobs weren't ready. Well, they weren't ready then, and the jobs that he promised, they're not ready now.
But
the other thing that we
lie.
Can do right away is we can end the war. We can end all these wars and this military aggression. Right now, we have bases in over 720 nations, 720 bases around the world. 720.
Right.
We need to close these bases. And let's start with Guantanamo, another broken promise of Barack Obama.
Right. First
he said
thing
that
he was
going to
close
the base.
Very first
he
thing.
Said he was going to close it. It's still open. Yeah. The other thing is what we need to do is the student debt. These are things that we can do. Now, not long term. These are short term. We can reduce we can get rid of the student debt and forgive the student debt of all students. That's $1.1 trillion of student debt that is currently owed. And who is that money owed to? Eventually, that goes into the big banks that we look at as far as paying that money back. But we need to make certain that these students are relieved of this debt so that they can become very valuable as far as what type of contributions that they can make to society without being burdened with this debt for decades to come.
Well,
but those are the three things.
Okay, we've just got like 8 minutes left, and there were a couple things that I wanted to ask you. We'll continue on next week at the same time because we have more questions for both of you. There's a lot going on, and next week will be more international. But you mentioned the veterans, and like you both said, like bring them home, put them to work. So you're saying that, you're not saying, but they're the fastest growing group of homeless people.
Of homelessness.
Of homelessness,
they are.
Yes. And so you've already mentioned the infrastructure, which we know in our country is really sad. We need that. So that would be one of the things you would do with them as far as bringing them home and putting them to work?
Right. And did you want to comment on that first, Steve?
Well, also not just throwing them into jobs, but giving them job training and education. With the economic draft, many of the veterans don't have the education skills they need.
How do we make a free education a reality?
Well, you have to start taxing the rich at a decent level. I mean, after World War I, the rich were taxed, at 90%. Today they're taxed at at 26%. So, you know, you have to raise the tax. You have to. Our campaign calls for raising it to 70%, the same amount that it was that the rich, this 1%, was taxed in the 1970s. So, to have these social programs for veterans, for single mothers, for English classes for immigrants, those kinds of things, you have to tax the rich. You have to change the tax structure. So,
okay. Then I have a question about that. Besides taxing them, what about having the schools owned by the people instead of having them money-making machines?
Right. And
that's all part of
the
right,
Socialist
part,
Party. We don't believe, Stephen or myself, we are very opposed to privatizing education. We believe that education is a human right, and it should be free. And that should be K through university level.
Right, and it does. Yeah, it doesn't have to be a money making deal.
Exactly.
Yet capital, capitalism accumulates capital at such a huge rate, especially by ripping off workers, that they're sitting on all this capital and they can't expand anyplace else because the world has become one. There's not a lot of frontiers. The capitalism to survive has to have a 3% growth rate. So now they've gone after everything. That every public education and services that the government provided, even prisons, because they privatize it and it turns it into profit making. All these social services become profit making. They're driven to do this because of their own system.
Right.
And, we have to reverse
that. Because we allow
that.
Exactly.
Right.
Their system exists for them, And
yeah. We
have to demand that those things become, yes, some things run by government is inefficient, but some things are run better by government. Like, look at the railroad system in this country. I mean, it's just, I was on Amtrak just a few days ago, and the workers had to spend the whole time apologizing because the air conditioning wasn't working. And then you look at a rail system in Europe that's run by the government, and look at you have speed, you have good rail service.
Yeah.
So it's not true that the government can't run things efficiently. They do, and you don't have all the overhead of the capitalists investing their money in it. So,
and what Stephen mentioned, a lot of this has to do with us having the wrong priorities. I think, Ruth Ann, you just mentioned about the prison industrial complex. You have the cost of housing an inmate here in California is somewhere close to $42,000 a year. If you look at paying for a four-year education for a student here in California, 4 years, it's only $30,000. So now we're looking at, what can we make the profit off of? In other words, they're making profit off the prisoners at the tune of $42,000 per year, and they're trying to privatize it, but they're also making profits off the students by strapping them with debt. So the whole system is just, it is not working. And we believe, as Stephen had mentioned, we need to start taxing the rich to make certain that these programs are available. We need to stop investing in war to make certain that we can provide for the social needs of working people. And presently, that is not being done.
Yeah.
And we have to stop. There's a veritable war on women.
Right,
women
exactly.
are being thrown out of the labor force at a greater rate than men, and that's because of all the privatization or the cutbacks in the public services. Single mothers have to now deal with children without any of the, without the support of social services that are being cut back. The right wing is out to ban abortion to make it illegal to overturn Roe versus Wade. And there's a veritable war on women, and that's why this is a socialist feminist campaign that we're running, and I'm running with Christina. It's she's a female and I'm a male. It's multiracial and it's also multigenerational. And all those things are very important, even, working with working with the Socialist Party and Stuart Alexander. I mean, showing how white people and people of color can really work together in their common interest in a racist society that's really trying to pit us all against each other. And that's the socialist message, is that we have, the working class has big problems. We have racism, we have sex, we have homophobia, we have anti-immigrant prejudice and many other problems. But our contradictions aren't as great as the capitalist class's contradictions, where
They can only make profit off of our wages, and if they squeeze us too hard, we can't even consume the goods that we produce ourselves. In fact,
we can't afford it.
It's so illogical. We go out, we produce the wealth, we receive a wage, then we have to go into a chaotic market and buy back what our class has produced. Why don't they? Socialism is rational because we will just receive the full benefit of what we do, and the wealth is there. And the capacity to provide an economy of abundance, because that's what socialism is, an economy of abundance, not scarcity. And I think that's important for people to understand.
I want to make certain that we have time for both of us to put out our information where people can reach us.
Please do that right now. Yes.
Yeah, Stephen?
Yeah, socialism.com. That's our website for the campaign. And
that's
as
plain
Stuart
socialism.com.
Said, socialism.com.
Okay.
Vote. Excuse me, it's www.votesocialism.com.
Oh, okay,
vote
I thought you
socialism.
Said vote at first. Okay, okay.
Yeah, votesocialism.com. But then the FSP, just do FSP, Freedom Socialist Party, and you'll go to our website, which is actually socialism.com. So votesocialism.com or socialism.com, either one.
Okay, all right, and Stuart?
And the quickest way people can reach me and my campaign is just pull up Stuart Alexander for President. And it'll have information for the Alexander Mendoza campaign. Or you can just put in Stuart Alexander. Just put in Stuart Alexander, and it'll have information, my personal web address, and also the web address for the campaign. The other thing is just go to Socialist Party USA if you want to find out how you can get involved with the organization, and whether it's in your community or on a national level, and also they'll direct you to the campaign as well.
Okay. And thank you both, gentlemen. Next week we will continue on.
I want to thank Stephen, Stephen Durham, as I mentioned, as you mentioned, Ruth Ann, he's a friend and also with the Freedom Socialist Party, and look forward to continuing this next week.
Well, thank you, Stuart. It's great that we're collaborating together.
Right.
And you're doing a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you too.
Thank you both. See you next Monday.
Thank you very much, Ruth Ann.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you next
week. Bye-bye.
Bye.